call the special meeting of the Kirby School Board to order at 6 o'clock. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call. Dave, I'm here. Cherry.
Here.
Hywell.
Here.
Hawk.
Here.
Grandal.
Here.
Aye.
Absent.
Frywell.
Here.
All right. Approval of the agenda.
I make motion.
Motion by Chris.
Second.
Second by Amy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carried 6-0. Discussion, WIAA Fall Sports Plan.
Mr. Dorschner, do you update us on what the Board of Control decided a week ago?
The WIAA Board of Control met, and they broadcasted their meeting online for everyone to tune in. I think like 4,000 people tuned into that meeting, and they met for 3 hours last Thursday and debated and in terms of fall sports and where they lied. What came of it was August 17th will be the start of practice for cross country, which just pertains to us, and then there's like tennis and girls golf, and then September 7th, the week of September 7th, start for volleyball, boys soccer, and football, which obviously just volleyball and football pertain to our district. So they were in the process of coming up with guidelines, and those should be out within the next week on what they're going to look like. They're going to be guidelines similar to what they had in the return to play for this summer. In addition, they gave schools the option to, if they're not going to participate in fall sports at all, that they would try to find opportunities. The Board of Control instructed the executive staff to find opportunities for those fall sports that would get missed out on in the spring. We met as a conference Friday, and we're essentially probably the first district to approach the subject with our school boards. Again, we really couldn't act on a lot of things on what fall would look like because we need the guidance first on if we're going to move forward with the fall sports. But they did pretty much say across the board, schools in our conference, we would not be in interest in moving any fall sports to spring. So we wouldn't take the WIA up on that offer on trying to find opportunities for any fall sports come spring. So that was pretty much across our conference the same rhetoric. So that's where we sit right now if anybody has any questions.
Just to add to the discussion, I spoke with Dave Anderson this morning, executive director of WIA, and asked about particularly the summer, the WIA recommendations which were made pertaining to summer contact. If you remember a few meetings back, there was a discussion here at the board. I have this is a copy of that document. So this is guidance for summer activities. What I wanted to know from Dave this morning was, and before I finish my question, he said, we are working on those right now, and they will be out very soon. And those would be guidelines for sports in the fall. I asked him specifically, will there be a large deviation from the recommendations for summer athletic participation? And he said there will not. With that said, I refer you to, it is page number 5, high risk level, and this is high risk pertaining to our area, Marinette County, which right now, according to local health officials in the state, Marinette County is high risk for COVID. These are the limitations relative to high risk. Some specific things in here, it talks about workouts being in pods, no more than 5 to 10 students, always working out with the same group, not having pods intermingling. And basically, what it does not allow you to do is have full contact football, face-to-face across a volleyball net, You wouldn't have competitions. You wouldn't have travel. That's if your area is in high. That's, again, these are WIAA recommendations for summer. He shared with me that the ones for fall would be very similar. Okay? So to give you some idea, then, as you get into the moderate category, which is on page 7, there's still no gatherings of more than 10 people at a time inside. Up to 50 individuals may gather outdoors for workouts. So just with that first sentence, you would have more than 50 individuals outside on the football field if you had a game here, just with the players from both teams. So that is a limiting factor, even into medium, in terms of sports participation. What I'm asking the board is, do you want our decisions for Krivitz Athletics based on the guidelines that come out from WIAA, or do you want something else? That's, I guess, what I'm asking the board to discuss and then later vote on whether or not we will follow those. I don't know. I would recommend following WIAA guidelines for the simple reason that if I'm asked the question, why is the school district Krivitz doing XYZ relative to sports, I can point to this document and say we're following WIAA's guidelines, which are based on this, this, and this health expert, whatever it is. I have something that I can fall back on as a district administrator and say this is why we're doing what we're doing. If it's something else, if the board decides to do something else, I don't know what that would be. I'm not recommending anything else. Then I'm going to need some guidance as to what we're doing and why we're doing it, I guess is the question. If the board wants something else, I can bring something else back. That's possible too. My recommendation would be to go with the guidelines when they come up. So that's just for discussion. And it's quite honestly, it's going to make, depending on the level that we're in, high, medium, or low, or very low, if we're in high or medium, it makes doing sports exceedingly difficult.
Well, and I think that not only us doing it, but would some other school that's in a lower one even want to come here? Or would they want us there? You know, that's going to happen, that, you know, because I guess I don't understand how they come up with high, low, and medium. And that's because I know it's Marinette County, but as a vicinity, we haven't had this high risk stuff, you know. So hard telling what it's going to be.
Yeah, there's nothing easy.
If it's not tonight, it's not tonight. But what the other athletic directors, coaches in our conference would like to know, you know, is Krivitz going to participate in fall sports, which it translates to, are you going to play games? Okay, against other schools. That's basically like the first question they're going to ask. Okay.
And when does this fall one come out?
To be clear, I'm not advocating that we don't play games. Not at all. I'm simply asking the board to decide whether you want to follow WIAA's guidelines for what we do here in Krivitz or not.
You're asking for a parameter with which we want you to function under to make the decision as to whether or not we play games. Yes?
Correct. And that's as simple as this document or something else that the board would decide.
When will they come up with the fall ones?
I would guess it would be in the next probably week or two.
Yeah, in the next week. Yep. I would think they would come up with
it. Pretty soon, because they know everybody's playing.
Yeah.
Is it all or nothing? Do we have to do all sports?
We don't have to do it.
If you follow WIA guidelines,
you couldn't very well do volleyball.
You could very well have some sports. And
you could have cross country.
And just not practice. Yeah, or just be able to practice another sport.
Potentially. Based on these guidelines,
based
yes.
upon what these guidelines, if they're not going to deviate far from these guidelines,
then,
in a nutshell, yeah, you could essentially have cross-country meets, you could have girls' golf, you couldn't have, you wouldn't be able to have football if it stays where it's at right now, according to this.
You wouldn't have football, volleyball,
wrestling. You could have those sports.
Volleyball, there's a chance more so than football.
You could have those sports. But what we're asking for is, do we as a district follow the guidelines? That's what we're asking for. Because I don't have the wherewithal. Coach doesn't have the wherewithal to come up with our own guidelines. We're not health experts. We don't. To make that decision, I don't have that expertise.
WIAA has a whole panel of people that in the medical field and that put this together, that are going to put fall sports regulations together. So it's a tough decision.
This is not easy.
As a person who loves high school sports.
Are you a coach or a...
as children that participate in high school sports, I believe they have a very important role. But they're not our primary role. We got to remember our primary role here is education.
Right.
Okay? And in education, we have to ensure the safety of not only the staff and the students, but our community. So we have to, we do need to find, to decide whether we want to use these guidelines or something else. I'm not sure what the something else
would be
or where we get the information from. And quite honestly, in saying that, to me it's a no-brainer that we go with the WIA recommendation.
Right. So, I think we could ask our nurse her opinion, but I think that would follow.
Yeah, so the WIA recommendations were mainly input from VHS and
the FBI. My opinion, I think we have to go with what's written here. You know, some small colleges have canceled the seasons already. So, you know, it's just, I think just we have to go with the people that know.
I agree.
Right, I mean, it's every day we're getting new stuff coming down the pipe. So, like, in the last couple of days, you had every D3 league in college in Wisconsin
cancel their fall sports.
And through not just fall sports, their fall semester, which means it affect their winter start too. That's through December 31st.
Yep.
You know, and the way that we've been seeing things trend, it's a trickle down effect from, you know, that level to here. But then, you know, I would be remiss to not inform you that there may be school districts that do away with these and go play. So there may be neighboring districts around us that do play.
More than likely there will be.
Probably. You know, so.
All we have to do is decide if we're going to follow these guidelines or not. We have to make a decision.
You're not making a decision on sport in general.
Okay.
I'm just asking the board to make a decision on following the guidelines.
It'll be what guidelines you want the administration to follow to determine whether or not there's sport. That's what we're saying. And so, I mean, if somebody has an idea of something else besides the WIA, we could use for guidelines, I guess now would be the time. If not, I don't think that you can really argue with it.
I don't know of any other guidelines out there besides what you have at the CDC, the State Department of Health, local Marinette County, which follows the State Department of Health, and the WIA guidelines. I don't know of another like competing set of guidelines, I guess you'd look at it as. With these, so
is there any further discussion on this?
So just to clarify, if we get to the point of playing games for a high-risk sport like football, we have to be in a low-risk category, county-wise.
Which potentially could.
Correct. Certainly could. That's the hope.
We were in a low risk for the longest time.
That's our hope.
And as the last school board meeting in our conference is during August 12th, we're going to meet August 13th. We're assuming that we're going to be going forward with fall sports as a conference. We may have mitigation efforts at our events. If we are allowed to play by WIA guidelines.
Is there any non-conference games?
Well, you know, and so just things that we're looking at. Nothing set in stone yet. Eliminating trianglers and volleyball and invites, so you're just having duels. That would be one example. We also, too, I suppose I should bring this up as well, we've been able to partner with NFHS and get two free Pixelot cameras, which are really high-def, nice cameras that move with motion, and there's no requirement of manning it with any personnel. That's a $5,000. Normally, that's $5,000. They're giving us those two cameras for free, and we just have to install it, which they offer that service for $2,500. We may try to have our own tech department install. So we are looking at stream efforts for our games this fall and winter, should they go off. Okay, this is just information I'm sending on what we've been working on.
One clarification question. Our football conference, is it the M&O conference?
It's called the NFC, the Northern Football Conference, which includes Tomahawk,
I mean, I just want to clarify the distance we'll be traveling.
Quite a distance.
If we play football. Because yes. I think everybody here assumes that we're talking to the Bandit O'Connell County Conference.
No.
And we're not.
No. And also, too, another thing that they're kicking around the conference, or conferences are kicking around with each other around the state, is just playing within certain counties. Well, we have one school in our conference that's outside of Marinette and O'Connell County. That's Oneida. And that's in Brown County, a hotspot. And so they've been meeting with Brown County health officials every week. Those schools have been, and their picture looks a lot different than our picture, you know, as of today.
So, there's just no perfect.
There's no perfect solution. The goal that the Board of Control put out there and our conference ADs put out there is that we want to do everything we can to give our kids an opportunity to play, compete, you know. But you're riding that line. Safety. So,
all right, is everybody good with this?
There's one question back there that can be answered at another time, but if we do have sports and our levels do go down to where we can compete, the Board is going to have to make a decision as to whether you're allowing fans, and if so, how many, what that's going to look like for football, basketball.
Isn't that part of these guidelines?
Well,
again, recommendations.
They're recommendations, but, I mean, like I said earlier, if you're moderate, you couldn't have more than 50 in a
They don't address fans.
So it'll be a question that'll come up probably later, but just something the Board should think about.
All right. Moving on, review the reopening of school play.
Okay. Forbes Robinson presents highlights of our draft plan. I just want to mention to everyone that this plan was put together with the help of admin staff, support staff, teaching staff. We took into strong consideration the results of the survey, which we looked over as a group there. All that taken into consideration when we put this together. We understand that this plan is not perfect. Perfect is we're here having school with our kids face-to-face 5 days a week with our teachers teaching their curriculum, you know, 175 days a year. That's perfect. If we can't do that and we have something different, this is a plan that we put together with the help of all those people and the advice of our constituents, our parents and guardians, and staff, to try and best meet the educational needs of our students and the health, safety, welfare needs of our students, our staff, and our community. So it is an attempt to try and meet as best we could the needs of as many people as we could, taking into consideration the opinions of as many people as we could, knowing that this is an imperfect document, it's an imperfect situation. It is our best attempt to this point to try and have school this year in person with kids. So with that said, go.
I took the document the school board had and staff was sent.
I don't know if they could hear me.
So, and there's nothing new in this presentation. This is simply an overview of it. It's catching some of the highlights.
Well, I think with your... Okay.
Everybody here?
I was just worried.
I'm sorry, because I can't...
Yeah. I was worried about the back and... Yeah.
No, I'm going. Okay, I'll pull out the teacher voice and I'll go. So, again, this is an overview. It's pulling out some of the highlights. I did it at the bottom of each slide, put the page numbers of the plan where I got that from, so you can, if you have the plan in front of you, you can kind of stay up with it. So again, just an overview of what we have. First and foremost, for overall school operations district-wide, families will select, they will be given the choice under this plan to choose in-person learning or online learning for each individual student. They would select that through our online registration process that they already do. It would be a separate page where we have this document linked to it so they can see it all and then make their decision. We're looking at having a due date for that at August 15th, giving us enough time to then make accommodations and adjustments to schedules and such. So both options will follow the board-approved district calendar. So the learning days, all of that will be the same. There's no blended, it's online or it's in person. With that being said, no matter which option the students choose, a current attendance policies will be suspended, adjusted, however you want to say it. Attendance is still taken. It's taken if the students are online or they are in person. If they are not attending, if they're sick, no matter if they're in person or online, parents are responsible for calling them in. Any student who is not called in, that unexcused absence will be followed up just like it is now with a phone call. You know, if they don't log in and we see that, or they don't show up, we still will be following that up. The attendance policy being suspended, what that means is there will be added absences. As was outlined, we talked about it at our last board meeting with the attendance policy or the health policy. You know, if they have a fever and they have to stay out longer than what was usual, the 24 hours, there's going to be longer and more absences. So that truancy process and the doctor's notes, it's going to be different, and we know that. That's what that little statement is. The last one has to do with visitors coming into the building, in that only essential visitors, mostly vendors, people who are delivering, will be allowed in the buildings. And then when they are coming into the building, they'll be required to wear a face mask and complete a health screening form. Otherwise, there will be different pickup and drop-off procedures for made at each school, whether it's a parent bringing a lunch that got, you know, forgotten, and doing it without needing to come into the building. Students getting picked up, very similar. They'll call when they're outside, but we're limiting the exposure of our students. Those, again, we're on page 3. One thing that, as a district, what we'll be doing is communicating with families for those virtual enrollment options, making sure they have everything that they need, making sure they know what the policy expectations are, that they have access to some of those services that they need, even though they've chosen an online option, so they know the expectations of transcripts and graduation. They still are private students, and so they are held to our handbook, our graduate requirements, things like that. Plans for libraries. Our librarian, Hope Simpson, actually put together a really great plan to make sure that that books and resources are accessible to all students, no matter if they are in school or if they are doing the online learning. So we have some different plans. It's outlined again later. Overall, for special education, anyone with IEP meetings will all be held virtually instead of face-to-face. That's specifically designed instruction. So if students have to be quarantined, they have to be online, we will work with that virtually. And then making sure that all of our staff know how to use those tools and, you know, complete any services virtually that need to happen. A majority of this document has to do with different infection control and mitigation practices. So what we need to do for those students who are in the building to hope we don't have an outbreak, to help keep them as safe as possible from any viruses, really, but obviously COVID. So staggering arrival and dismissal times, and where they're coming in is a big one. Working on scheduled cohorts, keeping grade levels together, class sizes together, and limiting that intermixing amongst those. In the elementary, when it's feasible, teachers will change classrooms. So if, you know, in some grades, like if there's 3 sections, one teacher will teach all the science, one will do all the social studies, one does all the writing. And instead of having the class get up and move and sit at someone else's desk, we'll have the teachers move. So then it's just one person moving environments instead of someone else coming into another child's desk. If teachers like that see multiple students throughout the day, he or she clean, disinfect the areas commonly touched by students prior to the new student's arrival or the teachers changing classes. Recess and lunch hours will be staggered to limit the contact with cohorts. Students may eat breakfast and lunch in classrooms. When the cafeteria is used, cohorts will stay together and seating will be limited to help students socially distance. Student desks and common seats in classrooms will be moved to maximize space, spread them out as much as we can within the classroom. when possible, decibels based all the same direction. And then with traffic patterns in the hallways, just keeping them going kind of in one direction on one side of the hallway so there's not a lot of congregation, kids running into each other, things like that. So that asymptomatic spread, when they need to go home and when they can't come to school. So if they're showing symptoms of influenza-like illness or COVID-19 based on the state health department guidelines, they need to stay home. If they've been in close contact with someone who's confirmed of having COVID, and I mean, obviously you can read all of that, but the contact tracing where they were within 6 feet of a person for 10 to 15 minutes, then obviously they have to be quarantined. So accommodating the educational needs of children and families through all of this, so staff and students with those symptoms are required to stay home and encouraged to contact and follow the advice of a medical provider, county health department, things like that. Staff and students identified as close contact to a confirmed individual will follow that quarantine protocol, and then contact tracing protocols will be implemented in conjunction with Marinette County Health. So we as a school will work with the health department on that contact tracing. Assigned seating in classrooms, cafeteria, all of that will be utilized so that to help with that contact tracing. Staff will perform a health screening every day, which is on this attached to this document. It is attached to it.
A self-screening.
they will conduct a health self-screening prior to every day. Parents and guardians also perform the same health screening for their child each day. And again, those documents were attached on the back of this. Staff and families are encouraged to self-report illness symptoms and notify school of exposures to assist with the disease surveillance. Okay. And then, again, it addresses the essential visitors. So only very essential visitors will be allowed, and then they ask a similar self-screening measure, and they will have to wear face covering. With that, field trips, large school assemblies, guest speakers, volunteers, all of that will not be permitted in the building during the school day. Personal protective equipment. So nurses have worked very hard on acquiring the adequate supply for PPE for staff to use and students who develop symptoms while they're at school. All staff will utilize a cloth face covering for source control, and the face covering must be worn when they are within 6 feet of individuals and in all common areas. So again, that is for staff. Information will also be provided to staff and students and families to know about cloth face coverings in schools, what they should know, the proper washings, removal, use, all of that. And big one is that cloth face covering. So they will be strongly recommended for students who are able to wear them and remove them properly. So the parents would need to provide them to students if they want their student to wear them. Again, from the CDC and State Health Department, it does say, you know, anyone under two, which isn't any of our students, but anyone who has trouble breathing, is unconscious, incapacitated, should not wear a cloth face mask, face covering. And then with the added risk of COVID, the spread of COVID because of the aerosolized particles, it's a little different for some of the music and band. So disposable surgical dye face masks must be worn by middle and high school students while they are in the choir room, unless they can get outdoors and be properly distanced. But because singing gets it aerosolized and it's more than just the big droplets of talking, it goes further, it's an added risk. That's why these are a little bit different. Elementary music is similar. However, we know that that's elementary kids and it's different, and it's part of their curriculum and they don't have a choice in that. So there they may be asked to wear it while they're engaged in singing, again, unless they're outside and can be properly distanced. disposable surgical style face mask with a slit opening for instrument mouthpiece must be worn by band students while in the band room, unless they're outdoors, and that instrument covers will be provided to further reduce the aerosol emissions. These recommendations came from a study that was done just on music and band and singing. So, and then, pulling away from the music theme, just on the cloth face coverings must be worn while on the bus. Everyone will have one on the bus. Unless they cannot wear
it. There would be exceptions made.
Yes, unless obviously health reasons say that they can't.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would never put anyone at risk that can't. For this plan, if this plan is approved, they will wear face masks on the bus, or face coverings on the bus. So then the cleaning and disinfecting measures, frequent cleanings, high touch surfaces, we want to decrease the sharing of different objects. So discontinue the use of vending machines or drinking fountains at this time. Water filling stations are available, and students and staff are encouraged to bring their own water or water bottles from home. And then along that with the extra cleaning, buses will be cleaned and disinfected after each meeting.
That means morning and evening.
Yes, after each route. So after the morning route, they'll be cleaned and disinfected. After the afternoon route, they will be cleaned and disinfected. Again, this is just highlights. There's more in there, obviously, this is just some highlights. So the health office, the nurse's office area, will be changed somewhat in that minor first aid situations, kid needs a band-aid, has a scrape, needs it cleaned up and stuff, will be handled in the classroom to prevent that congregation in that health room. At the elementary school, well child visits to the health room, so students that need like a daily medication, they're not coming because they're sick or because they're injured. They'll come in a different door, that back office, kind of off the gym by the girls' locker room. They'll come in that way. And then if they're exhibiting an illness, that they will be triaged in the main health office. So where they usually would come in, they'll come in there, and then the nurse will go through what symptoms and make her determinations of where she goes from that. Any students showing those COVID-19 symptoms will be provided a face mask in place in a supervised isolation room while they're waiting to be picked up. High school is very similar, injury care and medication visits will be routed through the main office, and then students in exhibiting those illness symptoms, again, will be given a face mask to wear, will be triaged in the main office, and placed in a supervised isolation room while they're waiting to be picked up. A couple things that are a little more relevant just to the elementary middle school building is that our unified communication tool. So as we get closer to school, we will have a lot more detailed communication to parents about pickup, drop off, some of those changes that'll happen that parents need to know. We'll implement the changes of traffic patterns for the hallways based on our building to aid with the distancing and minimizing the numbers of students gathering in a certain area. When it comes to buses at the elementary middle school building, schools will create our before and after school plan for increased car drop-off and pickup. And staff will be posted outside of the school in the morning, before school and after school, to monitor the bus loading and unloading and car pickup and drop-off. Buses will not be released all at the same time, so the kids coming off the bus will be staggered so that it's not so many kids all at one time. Students will be assigned a specific door entrance that they'll enter in the morning break up. We do have a lot of outside doors, so we can utilize that so not so many kids coming on the same entrance. And then, the traffic walking patterns will be identified and monitored by teachers to make sure that kids know where they're going and that flow is flowing. And make adjustments as needed, obviously. On the technology side, the Acelys, which I know is kind of coming up in more detail, will be used as an instructional platform for both information. in-person learning and virtual learning. Teachers will be provided additional and ongoing training on that Acellus. That's a huge technology, it's a new technology piece, so that is something that is very important that is covered. Infection control and mitigation, you know, a little bit more on our building. The classroom routines will be that hand sanitizing happens upon entering the building and entering the classroom. So wiping down desk supplies frequently and following established entrance and exit patterns to make sure that those cues are flowed is very important with our elementary students. School safety and mental health. One big change here is that open house would go virtual for everyone first grade on up, and we would have scheduled times for our 4K and 5K, as we know those are new ones to our building, but it would work a little bit more like parent-teacher conferences, where it's a scheduled one family at a time where there's, you know, some time, so it'll have to be broken up more than just that open house time, but for the rest of the students, open house will have been virtually, where parents can come in on a meeting with the teacher and be introduced and talk about expectations, and then those school supplies would just come to school the first day, come with the students the first day of school. Some changes to lunch is that the lady in the cafeteria will serve the students the food right on their own tray, rather than the student holding the tray and walking through and saying what they want. The servers in the cafeteria will put it right on the tray, pass the tray down amongst themselves, hand it to the student at the end. So they're not all, not every student's touching a serving spoon and things like that. So the food service will plate on trays the full meal of milk, the main entree, veggies, and then the food of choice. The major change there for us is that one grade level will be on the playground at a time. So currently, before this, there may be four different grade levels on the playground at the time with some overlap there. So this is a change of schedules where only one grade level would be on the playground at a time. And if we have to add the extra supervision to allow breaks for teachers and stuff for their own lunches, then we will do that as needed. Hallway movement, the biggest one there is lockers. Middle school students, there are some higher elementary students that have lockers too, but the moving between classes with middle school, the students will be allowed to carry backpacks throughout the day. That way they are going to their locker less often. So not everyone's at a locker at the same time. They can stagger when they go, when it makes sense. Middle school release times will be staggered also to help with that. So the congestion in the hallway, like seventh grade will be released a minute or two before eighth grade. So just more for the passing. Their lockers aren't near each other, but for the passing, there's not so many kids. The school library, I talked about a little bit, but each library will have the book return cards where they can sit, those books can sit for 72 hours before they're handled by staff. For the younger grades, we'll pull carts of books and bring them right to the classroom where students can look through them, and then anything that was not taken can be sanitized instead of having them walk around the library touching all of the books. Staff will lend student browsing, so we'll use our Alexandra program, which is an online catalog, and they can request books that way. They can email the librarian what books that they want for the older kids that are capable of getting on there. For the high school plan, again, just a few things that are relevant differently for the high school, so that students will have, ensuring that all students have what's necessary resources for them for their instructional model that they chose, whether it's online or in person. Before the school year starts, teachers and content teams will use consistent learning management systems. So if they're also going to use something like Google Classroom, they're all using that same platform for that app, like supplemental materials besides the Acellus program. All desks and tables in classrooms will face the same direction. Physical education classes will be conducted outside when the weather allows. Guidelines for the digital learning. The digital learning expectations will have the same degree of rigor and instruction as the classroom instruction. So it won't be harder, but it certainly will be easier. again with that technology, the SLS program. Again, I know that that's coming up on the board and that will be utilized if this plan is in place, is adapted or adopted. SLS will be used as a platform for both in-person and virtual learning, and then there will be limiting of supplies, electronic devices, so that, and if they do have to share something like computers in a computer lab or something, they'll get wiped down after each use. Transportation, very similar to what was discussed earlier, all buses will have Department of Transportation approved barrier between students and driver, so that's for all of the district-wide. And then the seat behind the driver will remain empty, and driver will maintain student attendance and seating charts, and then all buses will be sanitized after each trip. Again, at the end of this document were those self-screening forms for the employees, the ones that parents will do or will be asked to do of their students each morning. There's also another document of how long my child will be out based on those symptoms. And then the last page is the visitor screening.
Questions?